I think I'm having an art attack.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Art Attack. I am your host, Justin Bua, and I am here with my amazing co-host, genius, PhD, professor of art history, Lizzie Dastin. Degrees in so many things that it's like you're the real deal.
Well, thank you. And I have a lot of time to go to school, I guess, but I am very excited to talk about the artists that we're going to be going through today. And maybe yes. You can give an introduction as to how we chose him.
Well, you know, on my Instagram account, I like to talk about my art. I like to talk about art in general, but lately I've been on a tear to expose the ridiculous nature of the conceptual and performing art world, the performance art world, and how in the last couple of decades, the museum seemed to have given them full rein and everything goes. And I mean, look, Lizzie, we've come a long way since Duchamp's toilette, urinal. I mean, we really have. And, you know, there's all, we won't get into the history of this because we have all these episodes that we've already done on it. But for example, you know, we're far away from Serrano's Piss Christ at this point, and it just gets more and more ridiculous. Like I did the guy who was doing the pottery and hitting his face. I don't know if you saw that one, that post.
I did
the guy, and this is old stuff, like the guy who was sniffing cocaine and got like over 5 million views on that, and just all the different ridiculous, you know, the lady hitting butter with the microphone and everyone's gathered around like, oh my God, look at that.
That was my favorite one.
Was that
the just made yeah. me oh, hungry.
Because, right, because I did my mom's like voice. So that was really funny. So it's been so crazy. So I saw, you know, and by the way, I never go looking for this. I don't farm for any of this. I don't fish for any of this. It just comes to me because I have so many fans and friends who are just like, dude, you got to check this out. You got to do one on this. You got to do one on this. And of the, you know, 98%, I never do any of them because sometimes, by the way, they're really great. They're really cool new art projects. And I should probably do a lot of stuff on all the positive stuff because there's certainly a bunch of positive, but the negative are just so insane. And one of them was this video of a guy. Now, remember the context. I don't know at this time that you're friends with him. I've known you forever. You've known Hanksy forever. But I don't know that you guys are friends. I don't know why. I'm not putting it together. So I just kind of did this whole thing where, to me, this guy is in the gallery and all these, it's always made worse by the audience because the audience are these super hipsters, glasses, beards, cool hats. They're always holding a drink. They've got a nice coat and they're looking really intently like, wow, this is deep art. Probably not even knowing that Hanksy is making this, you know, kind of an ironic art installation, right? So this blonde guy goes and he kind of disrobes a little bit and then sleeps. And then that's it. And I'm like, here we go again, right? Like, so I think I got about 40 DMs. You have to do this. You have to do this. You have to do this. And so I wound up watching the whole thing through and I was like, sure, I'll do something on it. So without further ado, like, I don't really want to talk about it. I'll just kind of play you what I had here. This is right from my Instagram.
Here we are in the hipster elitist art world where people are holding their drinks, wondering what this amazing performance art piece is going to be. And he just basically strips down, goes to sleep. That's it. Getting Sex in the City vibes, guys. I mean, why? Wasting space with this shit for art. There's some damn good painters out there. What the fuck is this?
Okay. So that was my third. By the way, these are people think that I actually spend time on this. Like, I just do it. This is impetuously done. I just see something. Finally, I respond to it. I don't rehearse it. I don't script it. I just do it. It's just an immediate visceral reaction. So when I saw that, I was like, I'm going to just do that. And that's what I did. And then, of course, you know, I got 50,000 plays later, I think over 1,100 shares. And you text me like, hey, that post you did, that's my friend Hanksy. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then you're like, the guy.
And then your response was, and I tried to explain that he is doing more and that's only a portion of the piece, which I think we should definitely discuss. And then your response was so funny. You said, LOL, Lizzie, your friend is sleeping.
Well, I can't get too into the conceptual because most of the time it's just verbal diarrhea. But when Lizzie Dastin tells me that something is art, I have to at least take a deeper listen. And so you sent me his New York Times article, which I did read. And I thought that was very interesting, where he did an exhibit. I'm going to get this all wrong, so correct me. He crowdfunded 50,000, but got like quarter of a million or something like that, or lied. And I don't know what he did. He did a lot of hijinks and shenanigans and tomfooleries, but like he pretended he had this like mass campaign and he did this bus ad and that there was a documentary about him through his, or about somebody else that he was portraying. Right. Tell me about that one. And then we'll get back to the sleeping one. Cause that one was like, oh wow, this is interesting, because it felt a little like Exit Through the Gift Shop.
Well, I think that if it's okay with you, we should go back to Hanksy and that street art project, because that's how I encountered this artist who now goes by Adam Heimbach. And if we could just kind of go chronologically, because I do think it makes sense, these later works, when we contextualize them in the early. So Hanksy, he was completely ubiquitous in Lower Manhattan in the, I guess, around 2010. And in the years following Exit Through the Gift Shop, when there was a new proliferation of urban art in the streets of major cities, Hanksy was all over New York. And he gets his name from hybridizing Tom Hanks, a face, a little cartoon rendering of Tom Hanks, with the body of Banksy's rat. So, imagine this cartoon of Tom Hanks on the body of Banksy's rat. And then that sets the tone for the humorous nature of his street art work. He relies on humor and the already seen aspect of all of his pop culture icons. And he encourages viewers to really examine and consider their own lust with which we as a society consume celebrity. And they were fun. And it's also a way to engage the viewer, because you see the work, you know that there's a pun. And so it gives you the opportunity to figure out what that pun is. Like, I'm trying to think of some. There's Curious George Clooney. And so you see George Clooney, this cartoon rendering with the famous Curious George hat. And I love art that doesn't take itself too seriously, that engages fun, whimsy, humor, and play. And that is something that I was initially just delighted by when I saw Hanksy's work. And he was incredibly popular. And I think a lot of people utilize pop culture images, but in a way that is just so self-indulgent. And to me, Hanksy's ability to find the artifice in celebrity in a way that I hadn't seen before, I thought that was really interesting work. And then he shifts gears and he starts painting murals and canvas work. And then he went by Adam Lucas. And this work was very inspired by synthetic cubism. And so there's an emphasis on flattening forms and presenting bright colors with lots of rhythmic beats and opportunities for visual play. And those murals and that canvas work to me was also aesthetically seductive, but in a very, very different way. Now we have this pulsating energy of the city, whereas before, when he iterated as Hanksy, that was much more steeped in celebrity consumerism. It's kind of like Warhol when he paints Marilyn over and over and over and over. It in part is a commentary on how we, the viewer, consume celebrities. And I saw Hanksy's project as paying homage to that type of thought process. So already he has migrated his practice from the street to the canvas and more fine art murals, and then the performance and the more conceptual work that would follow. So we can go on to that unless you want to talk about any of the street art energy and the earlier work.
No, I want to talk about the fact that you said his work was very punny, because Shakespeare said that the lowest form of humor are puns. So, you know, but look, I'm open-minded. I mean, look at the responses on my page. I mean, most people think, and that's maybe the objective of Adam, is that most people think this is ridiculous. Your average art enthusiast or person out there in the world who's not in the insular ivory tower elite world of art, they really feel like they're getting bamboozled, and they feel also, some of them, and many of them, let me say, are struggling artists, tattoo artists, people who are working in their craft. And they feel like a lot of what is this? Like, what is this? Why is this taking up space? And so I'm, as an artist myself, I feel the same way. Now, we can look back and we could see in recent times, David Blaine did the same thing, right? David Blaine did the whole sleeping thing on, you know, way, way high. I mean, just there's been a lot of people. This is kind of more Houdini-ish and David Blaine-ish, and walking the line between art and just almost a biological magic trick. Like, I don't know if you know who Wim Hof is. Do you know Wim Hof? Wim Hof he's famously known as the Iceman. He goes into the deep ice. I met him. I've hung out with him. He's a really interesting guy. He's the real deal. But he was like injected with salmonella at the hospital, watched by a bunch of doctors, and with his breath work, he's able to overcome it. I feel like this is a little bit of that, which is, there is something where if he's really going to sleep and he's going to be, is he deprived of food and water during this or no?
No. So
okay. He's just sleeping.
Right. Well, let me, not to give a spoiler about this project, but it's already been written about in an internet publication, so I feel okay doing that. So This is his most recent work. And then I want to go back to the one that he did prior, because that was the piece that you read about in the New York Times, or that's right. What it was exploring. So this work is called Never Everland. And it's in two separate rooms in a gallery in New York. And in one room, there's the bed that you saw, and it's encircled by collages. Mm-hmm. And then in another room, there are large-scale paintings that Heimbach painted. So when you said, why can't people just be painters? He is performing this immersive, very conceptual work, but also there is an emphasis on traditional painting in the project as well. And so it's meant to be a conversational piece between a traditional expectation of what you're going to see when you walk into a gallery, and then the actual result of what it is that encounters you. So he does collide the ephemeral, immersive aspect of performance with something that's more object-based and traditional. So the bed that he was sleeping on, he supposedly sleeps on this bed for the entirety of the month-long exhibition. You definitely see that he's sleeping through the duration of the art opening. And then people can log on to this special YouTube to just check in on Adam sleeping at any hour of the day through the rest of the time. So in actuality, there's a loop, and he's not physically sleeping in there, but there's a loop of him sleeping prior to the opening of the gallery.
So it's not like the Truman Show where they're actually watching every single thing.
No,
he's not doing that.
He's not doing that. And it's almost, it's being very self-referential to vintage Abramovich when she physically puts her body to a maximum amount of discomfort. I'm thinking of the 2010, The Artist is Present. Well, we know that the artist was present because we as a viewer could sit in front of her, as I was fortunate enough to do. So you see her, there's a physicality to that performance. But Heimbach, even though there was a physicality to the opening, it's the assumption or the illusion of presence and possibly the subversion of what it means to be present throughout the rest. So it's some disinformation and playing upon expectation versus reality. So the traditional paintings, I think, pair well with the digital component. So the paintings are incontrovertible. And then the visual feed, we learn, is quite the opposite. So there really is a lot of play with these themes of expectations of viewership that he does.
It worries me when very smart people like yourself, you're very smart, you're very articulate, you use words beautifully. When you justify, not even justify, validate these things, because, you know, it's like politics. We get taken and swooned with words, but the reality of the situation, I feel, is much different. And I'm not saying, Lizzie Dassin, you're a dangerous misinformation art snob. I'm not saying that at all. But I'm saying that, like, okay, perhaps can we say that maybe there's a deeper need to do this to survive, to thrive, to make money. So he knows that not everybody is going to come to see his paintings, but if he does more of a stunt, because it's a gimmick in a sense, right? People want to see crazy shit. They do. I mean, we're attracted to car crashes. We're attracted to David Blaine, you know, freezing himself, hanging himself, do all these crazy things. We love the spectacle. So this is a spectacle. Like, oh, I want to go see this dude sleep. And, you know, that's what people are talking about. How many people left there saying, oh my God, that painting was just, I can't believe those paintings. Just what a great idea, just to bring us in through this other idea, this other concept. Now, that being said, I did get a couple of people who were like, oh, you should see his paintings.
Yeah, you know, his paintings are great.
Yeah, and I thought that was very interesting. And look, I'm caught between, I have to create a boundary to say, like, I'm still with, this is not art. Okay, this is not art. This is bullshit. I call bullshit on this. I'm not saying Adam is not an artist. Okay, Adam, do you hear me? If you're listening, I'm not saying that at all. But you're talking to me who studied with, like, you know, went to Art Center, studied with some of the masters of the masters, paid a lot of dues. I'm like the Navy SEAL of art. You know, I've been drawing the figure since I was in high school, and I'm still drawing the figure, like, at a high, high level. Like, so I'm looking at this and I'm saying it's a gimmick, but I love the hustle that if he uses this on some level, even unconsciously, on some level, he's pulling in people with this. Because, man, let me tell you, if there's ever a time to be a hustler in the art world, it's now. It is not fair. There's nothing fair about art. Some people make it, some people don't. And sometimes, unfortunately, it does not depend on your skill level or how really good you are, or how creative you are. It doesn't. It depends on who you know and what you do to get people's attention. I think this is such a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant way to get attention. And I want you to walk us through his other project, what I read about in the New York Times, in which he really brilliantly becomes the publicist, the digital marketing agent, the artist, the actor. He becomes like a one-man show of you know, Taylor Swift entourage, right? Like, you got to have it's true. Like, you have to have an entourage to survive at a high level today. I don't care who you are. Gone are the days where you had the Leo Castellis and Andy Warhol and you didn't need that. You just had friends and homies and you just made it. You need a very well-oiled entourage to elevate you. I know people in the music and art world and they have great entourages. They are, no one is acting independently. And what I see from Adam with that piece that I read about in the New York Times, it seems like he's acting completely autonomously. No?
Yeah, he is. He, that piece I thought was very special. But before we discuss that, if I could just go back to one of your points and the comment that there's some gimmicky shtick involved in the bed sleeping. And you mentioned that too with the puns. And if I could just share a personal anecdote that I have related to that. So my grandfather was a very popular novelist, and throughout his career,
Sidney Sheldon, if I may just tell everybody, yeah. Sidney Sheldon,
who created, true. I don't know if anybody who listens to the show would know who he is.
Well, like I'm of the age where I grew up watching shows he created, like I Dream of Jeannie and
Heart to Heart and the Patty Duke Show.
Oh my God.
Yeah, what an incredible storyteller. And that's why I'm interested in storytelling. It's because of my grandfather's example. And he, throughout his life and career, received feedback from people saying, you write smut. This isn't literature. What are you doing? Basically, the breakdown of high and low. And that, I think, goes back to your earlier quote from Shakespeare about puns. Mm. And he received an equal number of letters saying, my son or daughter started reading because of your work. And I don't think it really matters if it's high or low, if the work brings in viewers with a curiosity about art.
I'm not gonna knock the brother's hustle, but as a Navy SEAL of art, I cannot tell you that this is what I think art is. Not everybody is just like equal. Let's be real here. That's all bullshit. Like if you have two fighters, MMA fighters, one guy's never trained, one guy is highly trained, it's very obvious who is the fighter and who is not. And I feel like there is something there about art. Just because you make art does not make you an artist. You see what
that's
I'm saying?
True.
Just because you get into a fight, it could make you an idiot, by the way, but does not make you a fighter. Fighters are very skilled. They go through a very rigorous training process. They're doing jujitsu, wrestling, kickboxing. They're dealing with all kinds of things and all kinds of training and diet and all blah, blah, blah. But we've been able as an art community, speaking for the community of artists, people have been able to get away with artistic murder. They have. And everybody calls themselves a fucking artist.
Well,
that's not fair.
The fighting metaphor, can't there be different types of rings or different types of fights?
No.
No, there's only
not
one.
Everybody is a fighter. That's insane. People are going to get killed. If everyone just goes, oh yeah, I'm a fighter. Okay, cool, great. Step into the octagon with this guy. Oh my God, that was scary. Like, it's just not fair. Not everybody is great. And that's fine. And by the way, that's totally fine. Once again, I'm going to go back to the positive side, which is Hanksy's hustle. And it takes so much from your spirit to hustle, to get people into a gallery these days, especially doing it yourself. I have all the respect in the world for anybody trying to do that. You know, I'm just trying to make a distinction between anybody can sleep. Anybody can do that. I can do that. You can do that. You know, and you know what I'm saying? Like my 5-year-old can do that, but not anybody can do certain things. I mean, there's one Michelangelo for a reason. There's one Rembrandt for a reason. These people were exceptional.
No,
I
hear what
you're saying.
Takes
away from the exceptionality of everybody who's
okay,
who's great.
Then to move past the art historical circumlocution, let me just tell you personally what I appreciate about this work.
Okay.
So the bed, yes, everybody can sleep, but as a symbol, beds represent extreme bodily vulnerability. We sleep in beds. We're born in a bed. We are sick in beds. We have sex in beds. We die in beds. There's just something very, very personal and intimate about a bed. And then echoed is the vulnerability of the paintings that are surrounding him. Each of the landscapes, they are symbolic references to a notable, often sad moment in Heimbach's past. And as an urban artist, especially one who has a moniker, who isn't forthcoming with his or her identity, you veil yourself. You're painting, but you never really reveal who you are, what you're about, what you've experienced. And something that I see as connective within the various versions of Heimbach's career is that he's not really showing himself. And in this work, I see him change that dynamic, and that he is subjecting himself to vulnerable onlookers and connecting with people on a different level. So I'm not discounting anything that you're saying, but from my perspective, what I really appreciate is that sharing and going back to the past and obscuring painful memories and then physically sharing your own vulnerability. That's something that I relate to.
Okay, let's move past that as friends and go on to the...
I would like to be friends with you after this show.
No, of course. I don't really care. Like, I don't have a horse in the game, honestly. Like, I just want to call it for what it is. And there's so much more wrong with the art world now. We're really under threat with AI and prompting being the new artwork. And we're artists in general. And by the way, performance artists too, and conceptual artists too. Everybody, in my opinion, is under the threat of AI, which is another episode.
Yeah.
But I believe that I believe that there has to be standards, like anything. There has to be ethics and standards in this world. But I want to know more about the piece he did for the New York Times, because I find that to be masterfully crafted in terms of like the way he was able to reach and get the message out and get people inside the doors. And I want to know about that, because I don't know anything except the article that I read.
Yeah, and just the fact that it was picked up by such a venerable publication, I thought was really exciting. So this piece to me is just a masterclass in conceptualism. So Heimbach, he created this persona of a famous artist from the 1970s, and how there was going to be a release of this documentary about Adam Heimbach. And he created this whole world of, there was a Taschen book, and a one-man show.
How did he do the Taschen book? Wait, how did he, like, he made it up, you mean?
Yeah, like, yeah, he made it up.
But it wasn't really available?
No, it wasn't available. Okay. And there was a one-man show at this incredible museum that doesn't exist. And it was so cool just seeing all of this footage that's meant to look like it's from the 1970s. I was a little bit upset that I wasn't asked to be included in that as an art historian talking about the impact of Heimbach's decades-long career, but it was so well done, and it apes the style of a documentary look at an older artist. And I think its interplay of time seen backwards, almost like a Stephen Sondheim musical, like that show Merrily We Roll Along, where we start at the end and we end at the start. And so it's tongue-in-cheek, but it also taps into the trope of ageism within the art world. How if somebody is older, then maybe we see them as more valuable because of a certain number of years in the art world, or just questioning whether that's true. And Adam, he is young. He's a young artist. And so it's almost like an exercise in manifestation, where he's manifesting the eventuality of his career that hasn't happened yet, but that on some level does exist. And it was just very sophisticated, I thought. And a lot of people were confused. They thought that Heimbach was this artist from the 70s onward, and they were looking for his work in collections, and they felt tricked or duped. And I think that is a criticism that has befallen this most recent show as well, because there is the quote unquote trickery of him not physically sleeping in the space. So I think, again, it's this discussion of expectation and reality.
When he finally had the show, was it packed? I was reading in the New York Times that he sold a bunch of paintings too, right?
I don't actually know. I didn't think that there was a physical show. There could have been. I haven't read that article since it came out, but of course it would be packed. There's such a spectacle and a questioning. Who is this guy? And is he really in his 70s or is he in his early 40s? And there were some documentary photographs, and I put that in quotes because they don't document something from the past, but they're concurrent to the contemporary moment. And so you see him styled and festooned as if he's this 1970s figure, but you see people in the background with puffer coats.
So it's funny.
It's always like, what am I seeing? Am I really seeing that? And the art world, as you and I have discussed ad nauseum, is so much about who is anointed and what if you just anoint yourself?
I mean, honestly, that's what I love. I do love that about Adam, because I'm all about self anointation. I don't know how I would use that word, but I feel like if you don't, it's like, if you don't do it, who's going to do it for you? And if you don't have a team, who's your team going to be? And I respect that, because being in the game for so long, I know how, you know, I'm sorry to say, but it's an evil world. You know, it's a very evil world, and you know that too on another level. And there's cliques. There's a lot of cliques, and the same shit that goes on in grade school continues on in our lives. And there's people who are bullying you. No, they're not pushing you or taking your lunch, but they're saying, oh, well, you know, we don't want him or we don't want her because they said this about me, or they voted for that guy, or, you know what I mean? It's like crazy. And so it's not, you know, life is unfair. It's not based upon how talented you are, how good you are, how historically relevant you are, how much achievements do you have under your belt, why your work is important spiritually and historically. They don't think about that. They think about, well, you know, my brother's good friends with him, and or my collector wants me to do it, or it's all elbow rubbing and friends. And so any artist that's going to take it upon themselves to do all of that work is just that is emblematic of one of the pieces of the pie that you need to have today in order to do that. Unless you're just going to, you know, brown nose your way all the way through, you know that. Like, it's just like, it's one way or the other. You're going to do it your way and be a trailblazer. And the trailblazers are called trailblazers because they're blazing the trails. And 99% of the people are following the trail. They're following the way that everybody went. They're just going along with the herd. We're herd animals in many ways. So when you see somebody that's kind of outside of the box and doing it their way and critically thinking, even about getting out there to the world, proliferating your own narrative to the masses and to your audience, that's fucking incredible.
And that's something that you and Adam can relate to, even Absolutely. Though your work is incredibly different. The fact that you have circumvented the expectations of the mainstream or the trajectory of the mainstream, I think is really unusual. And another point of connection between your work and his, I believe, is your willingness to evolve. And not a lot of urban artists, I think, are equally as willing. And the fact for Adam that he starts out as squarely a street artist and then migrates that practice to murals and now into conceptual performance and all kind of keeping in the same spirit of ephemeral work. I just think that's exciting. That's dynamic. And all artists should feel that same encouragement to evolve. And your career certainly has evolved too. And I really respect that as an art historian, that somebody who's achieved success for one type of work hasn't just decided to stay in that lane because it's easy.
Yeah. And I think that, you know, you see people do that in the acting world. You see people do that in the art world. You see that all over. And I think the definition of evolution is changing to, you know, adapt to your environment. And I think that's definitely what I've done in my art career. I'm a little Picasso, a little Madonna in that way, not Madonna now. Oh my God. She's what's going on with her, but no, but you know what I mean? Like in the fact that she was always evolving and changing and, you know, and so are so many great artists. Prince is another one who's always evolving, always changing, his transformation, getting better. And I could see why you would make that. It's such a weird thing. You're making a comparative between me and Adam, which is hilarious.
Two
comparisons. Yeah, no, but I see that. Like I think that is really nowadays one of the most important things, and will be more important even with AI and the advancement of artificial intelligence, getting their tentacles into the art market. It is very dangerous. So you really have to be a voice for yourself. And for that, if you're going to vote on Adam, I'm going to vote yes, just for that. I like this guy. No, I do though, because ultimately it's so hard. It's so hard. It is exhausting. And the older you get, you realize it's even more exhausting if you want to just keep up with the Joneses and grind and get better and be true. It's exhausting to be true and to bring people into your world to say, hey, here's what I'm doing. Have a look. You know, that's intense. And so
and very vulnerable too.
Yeah.
Just to do that. Sure. So yeah. So I think that there are themes that maybe you can relate to, even mm-hmm. if the actual performance itself is something that is not what you would consider mm-hmm. art in the way that you would like to make and consume it. But still, we can, if we understand the intentionality behind the works, then I think we can find more areas of intersection than not.
Lizzie, I appreciate you so much. And Adam, I appreciate you. We are the same on two levels and even three levels, because you and I both have blonde hair, although mine is white. Okay, Adam, Lizzie, thank you for tuning into another episode of Art Attack. I'll see y'all later. Peace.